Okay, let's get started.
Wait, just a minute, partner.
No.
Guess again, freak boy.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
AudioTU.com. Another fresh picked pod from AudioTU.com. Shutters Inc. with Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 55 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from AudioTU.com. With me on the line via Skype from Melbourne once again, Shelton Muller. How are you?
G'day, Bruce. I'm really good. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent.
55. Yeah. We're ready to retire, I think. We'll start talking a little like this now.
Back in my day.
Oh, back in my day, lad. Oh, 55, you're still working like a young man. Back in my day.
Get up. Lick road with tongue.
Luxury.
Yeah, try and tell the young kids today and they won't believe you.
There's just a little bit of our Monty Python banter for all those Pythonites out there who might know what the hell we're talking about.
So what are we going to talk about this week?
Well, you know, it was really nice to get responses from our listeners this week, and mm-hmm. a few of the regulars and a couple of newies that have not emailed me or discussed things with me before, so that was really, really great. And I thought there's all sorts of emails, and by the way, folks, if I don't get the chance to respond to your email immediately, don't think it's forgotten. It's just, you know...
He's a busy man.
Yeah, I mean, you know that from trying to get hold of me sometimes, Bruce, yeah. and doing this podcast. It's just that sometimes I simply... haven't got time in that period of a few days to email you back immediately, but I'll do my best to either email you back and say, hey, we're going to talk about it on Shutters Inc., or I'll email you back with an answer, or I'll just say,
or
go
we'll
away.
Just cover it in the podcast.
Or we'll just cover it in the podcast, or I'll just say, go away, I really don't care. But no, that's really not going to happen, no, because I do care. I really do care. Well, actually, you know, I went to the AudioTU.com website, something yeah. everybody should do, and I was going through all our podcasts because Robert Iverson of Phoenix, Arizona, was asking the question about thirds, the compositional rule of thirds, and I thought, surely we've mm-hmm. talked about that, and then you reminded me that your name isn't Shirley, and it's Bruce, and I've to correct myself. So we're talking about the compositional rule of thirds today. It's something, I suppose, that we take for granted, because it's one, I think it's an innate compositional rule, although perhaps it isn't. Maybe I presumed that it was.
Right.
And also, I thought, like I said, that we had actually talked about it before. So let's discuss it. And then I've got a couple of questions to answer. So thank you, Bob, for asking this question about the rule of thirds. A long, long time ago, in a land far away, namely Greece and the time of Aristotle, he asked his students where the most compositionally pleasing place to put a knot in a piece of string was. Now, that's Greek philosophy for you, isn't it, eh? I mean, you know, they built the world on this kind of banter. But anyway, his students went away, and they discussed it among themselves, as they would all important matters of the world. And they came back and they said, quite unanimously to Aristotle, that the most compositionally pleasing place to put a knot in a piece of string was 0.38 in from the end. And he agreed, and they based that on all sorts of mathematical rules that we now call the golden mean. Now, the golden mean is, very roughly put, a rule of thirds. Technically, it isn't, mm-hmm. if you really, really want to get technical, but...
Because the third would be 0.33.
Well, that's right. you know, exactly. But, you know, it's a close enough rule, and we really don't want to start drawing millimeters and, you know, lines in our pictures and making sure that we're, you know, in exact thirds, because that's mathematics.
What you do is you get a nail and you scratch it across the lens at the one-third mark, and then, yeah...
Well, that's exactly right. That's let's just finish the podcast here. Thanks for stealing me thunder. Yeah, I was just going to, you know.
Don't anyone go and do that.
You want to do this yourself, Bruce, do you? You may as well.
Sorry,
mate. we really don't want to get, you know, too technical, because it is a very technical reason they came up with 0.38, and I can't even remember it. But the rule of thirds is, I think, a fairly innate rule. We often tend to do things that way anyway, or compose that way. But let's say you divide your grid into... horizontal or vertical thirds. Let's say we're doing a landscape. Often we shoot our landscapes with what we call landscape format or horizontal composition, although we'll talk about that in a moment. If you were to divide your frame up into thirds, you would place the horizon, say, at the bottom third or the top third. In other words, a third from the bottom or a third in from the top. And you would have, so it would depend on whether you wanted to highlight the sky or highlight the landscape. But by the same token, a good friend of mine, Ian Rolfe, who writes for my magazine, has very successful landscapes putting the horizon, that's what it's called, right smack bang in the middle. And I've often looked at his images and said, that shouldn't work, but it does. So he makes it work, but most photographers will, as a matter of, I suppose, an innate, sense, just make it the third. I always have, until one day I found out it was actually a compositional rule or compositional sort of formula. But let's have a look at that also. I tend to shoot a lot of landscapes vertically, and if you have a look at my Canada stuff, you'll realize that I have a tendency actually to shoot my landscapes vertically because I like using wide-angle lenses and I like sweeping foregrounds, and often my third is the top third because I like that really strong compositional foreground, and I use that to sweep up and place my compositional, or my horizon rather, compositionally in the top third, leaving only a little bit of room for a mountain or a bit of sky or cloud or whatever it might be. A lot depends on what I'm highlighting. If the clouds are the highlight, then really I will probably put the horizon in the bottom third. Now let's pretend that our frame is divided up into horizontal and vertical thirds. Now we have a grid of nine squares or nine particular frames, and there are four points there where your thirds meet, and those are very powerful points. Those four points where the horizontal and the vertical thirds meet are very powerful placements for smaller or subject matter that you want to highlight. And I've learned that you can actually, if you can't get close to something, we've often talked about getting close on this podcast as being our first and primary aim, is to fill the frame with the subject or to remove extraneous or unwanted matter from the frame. If you can't do that through some reason, you haven't got a long enough lens, subject's too far away, subject's too small, whatever it might be, I've learned that you can actually place a subject on that third and still make it stand out as if it, and your eye will naturally go to that sort of that dynamic point where the horizontal and the vertical third meet. This is a very difficult thing to describe in words, so what we're going to do is send a few photographs to and post them up on audiotu.com so that you can see what I'm talking about. There was a picture I took in Vietnam, and I'll try and find it for this podcast, of a man working in a rice paddy, and he was far away, and I had my 80 to 200, but it still wasn't going to work. And so the only thing that I could do to say to the viewer, this is the subject, I know he's in a huge landscape, I know there's so much else to look at, but this is the subject and I want you to see that. The only thing that I could do was to place him on one of those dynamic points where a horizontal and a vertical third meet. Those four particular points that the eye will go to if you place a subject there. I used, minimal depth of field and a long lens, but nonetheless, I still opted to put him on that point. And therein, really, if you can do that, if you can see your frame in that way, you'll find that your compositions will be very strong. A lot of people tend to, especially amateur photographers and family snappers, tend to put faces and whatever their subject might be smite bang in the middle of their frame, and that is just the thing very rarely to do. It very rarely works. You'll see that some of the most powerful images are usually those where they are composed to the left, to the right, to the top, or to the bottom third. And very rarely will a photograph work where you've placed something, little rifle scope, smack bang in the middle. What it usually means is that there's a lot of negative space at the top of the frame anyway. So, try to avoid doing that. Often you'll find that thirds will happen in photographs that you actually don't know that you've shot with a third composition until you really pull apart the image and see that you have. You might actually fill the frame with your subject, but perhaps the eyes or some dynamic part of your subject might fall into one of those dynamic points and you didn't even know it.
I was just about to ask that. about, you know, when you are doing a portrait of a person, you know, is there, you know, let's say you're doing like a head and shoulders portrait, is there a particular part of the image that you should try and get to one of these, you know, four dynamic points? Like, is it the eyes or, you know, is it the center of the face or whatever?
The eyes have it, they do. And often in a portrait, even if you were to fill the frame entirely with a human face, you would often find that you will often put the eyes in the top third or one of the eyes in that dynamic point where, you know, the vertical and horizontal third meet. And you will often find yourself doing that innately. And if you don't, we'll work to that end. It's a compositional rule, and it is used a lot. I can't say that it's overused, because it just tends to be the way we like to do things. But the thing to avoid, and the thing that working with thirds avoids, is negative space. Negative space is, you know, exactly, I suppose, as it is described. It's space in your image that serves no purpose and is empty and void and has no reason to be there. Working with thirds tends to avoid that waste of space, or that negative space, I've found. And even where you fill the frame with the subject, like I say, you'll often find that something of importance or of interest will find itself, you know, on that third. And another thing that you can do, very, very compositionally powerful application, is to use leading lines and thirds. If you have a pathway, for instance, and maybe someone walking along that path, take that pathway from the bottom corner of your frame, the right or the left, and lead it up to that dynamic point in the top of the frame where your vertical and your horizontal third meet, and place your subject there. So now not only do you have a use of thirds going on, but you have a leading line taking you there as well. That is powerful. Your eye just naturally looks at the frame, looks at the picture, and because it's in a third, in that dynamic point, and because you've got a leading line, a fallen log, a pathway, a fence, a road, whatever it might be, taking your eye there, the subject is screaming at you. And there's no doubt about it, no matter how small the subject is in your frame, the eye will still be led there. Leading lines in conjunction with thirds is a very powerful tool. And a leading line can be anything. It can be a person's arm or leg. It can be an animal's limb. It can be a road.
Shadow.
A shadow. Extreme. What a good example. A shadow is an excellent leading line. And like I said, mate, do you want to do this podcast or, or me?
Sorry,
if you're going to start taking over, mate, all right, I'm just out of here, okay? What a good idea. No, it's absolutely true. A shadow is something you can, you know, generate yourself.
Or architectural things, you know, like bridges or whatever.
To use the combination of these tools in your composition is a very powerful thing. Really, essentially, what is composition? It is an endeavor to tell the viewer, this is my subject. That's why we compose. This is my subject. I've placed it here because this is what I want you to see. And even when we fill the frame, that might be all we see, there's a subject within a subject that we'll still want to place somewhere dynamically within the image, so that our eye is nonetheless drawn there. And in the case of a human or an animal, it might be the eyes. But in the case of a landscape, it might be a tree, a rock formation, a waterfall. It might be something along those lines. So by all means, try to use combinations of compositional rules, formats that basically say to the viewer, this is my subject, please do not get confused with anything else in the frame, this is really why I took the picture. And the rule of thirds and leading lines will do that. So, Bob, I hope that's helped. I've looked at your pictures that you took at the Phoenix Zoo, and you know what? You actually applied some of those rules, and maybe you didn't even know it. But I'm glad you asked the question, because it is something I must admit I've always found to be an innate compositional rule, as did the students of Aristotle. But not always is it the case with us as photographers, and not always will we go that way unless we, you know, look at or know the rule and then conscientiously apply it. I'm not suggesting that it is a rule per se and that breaking that rule is a bad thing. Like I said, my colleague Ian Rolfe breaks that rule all the time, and you can go to his website, ianrolfephotography.com, I think is his website, and
I'll find the link and put it on the Shutter Zinc page.
And you can see that a lot of his very successful landscape work is shot where the horizon is dead smack bang in the middle. So, and it works. I mean, Ian is a landscape photographer to me of one of the highest order, and I won't argue with him on the use of where to place a horizon. But that's why breaking the rule is good. But you got to know the rule to break it, and I think that is also a part of using the rule. You know, knowing the rule first and then breaking it deliberately is a conscious effort to make that image dynamic. So I have no problem with that. But therein, really, essentially, in its simplicity, is not only the rule of thirds, Bob, but also, you know, a few suggestions as to how to use it. Now, a couple of other questions came in. One question came regarding the possible sun damage on a CCD. If you're taking photographs of the sun, sunrise or sunset, or perhaps if you include the sun in your image, does it harm the CCD? I've done a little bit of research, and apparently not, unless your camera doesn't have a mechanical shutter. Most cameras do have a mechanical shutter, which will of course block the sensor from any light until the moment of exposure. But if the sensor is exposed for a long time to the sun, then even like a frame of film would have been damaged, so can the sensor, the CMOS or the CCD, be damaged. But there are very few cases where that's actually happened. Please don't get put off taking pictures of sunrises, sunsets, or, you know, including the sun in your image, thinking that it may damage your CCD or your CMOS sensor, because in the research that I've been able to do since having been asked that question, I haven't seen that it's been an issue with anybody particularly. So I hope that answers your question as well. Getting back to Bob, all the best too with your Phoenix Boys Choir photography. May I suggest that Bob talked about the fact that he had to photograph the Phoenix Boys Choir. Congratulations, by the way, on your appointment to do to be their photographer. That's particularly good news for you, I'm sure. You've suggested that you've got prime lenses which are fast. Yes, definitely use them. Putting your flash on will only ruin things. So use your prime lenses, Bob, with your wide apertures. Make sure you focus very correctly, because you'll have minimal depth of field. And make sure, of course, that you expose for if there's stage lighting, just try to expose for the faces and for the highlights, because black is black, as the old song says. So don't let any darkness behind the subject fool your image to blow out the faces and the detail in the faces. That would be, otherwise I think you'll have it down pat. Your email seemed to indicate that you knew what you were doing with your faster prime lenses there, mate. What we all want to see will be some pictures, so send us some through, you know, when you've taken those photographs. But I hope that our discussion today on the rule of thirds and using leading lines also has been of some help. And please send us some images to let us know that this podcast is of benefit to you, that you've listened and you've applied, and your photography is improved. Because that keeps us excited here at audio2u.com, doesn't it, Bruce?
Absolutely. And if anyone else has got images, you know, that you've taken in the past where, you know, you recognize that you use the rule of thirds either consciously or subconsciously and you thought it worked really well and you're happy to share them, then please, you know, send them through studio@audio2u.com and we'll post them on the website.
Yep, that's great. And like I said, it's good for us to know that we're helping you, and it's also good for us to know where we're failing you, where we haven't talked about something that you want to, you know yeah. about. I must admit, Bruce, and it really surprised me that we had not gone into the rule of thirds. So there you go. Sometimes we take things for granted here. So.
I got an email through the week from Steve Mayfield in the UK, who's a bit of a fan, and He took umbrage. He said, "Incidentally, how dare you and Shelton say that it rains here 340 days a year? It's only 335.
Really? Terribly sorry, mate. Yeah. So you get those 5 extra days.
Yes.
Go swimming, mate. Knock yourself out.
One other thing I would like to make, or a couple of other things I'd like to mention. One is that a couple of people, after hearing last week's episode, very generously went and put some money into my PayPal account to help with the postage for the GorillaPods. And I would, as much, even though I've replied to those people personally and said thank you, I would just like to take this opportunity to say thank you very much in public. Those donations are very gratefully accepted. I would say, though, you know, maybe hold off because, you know, I still haven't got them, so I don't know what's, you know, how long it's going to take, but thank you very much to those people who made donations. One other thing I've started noodling around with is Cafe Press. Now, some of you may have already heard about Cafe Press. It's a site where you can set up a free shop and create your own merchandise to sell. And basically what happens is if people want to buy your merchandise, they go to your Cafe Press store, which you will find linked off the audio2.com website, or at least you will by the time this podcast gets out. You then go to the store, you find the merchandise, you know, that's got audio to you on it, and if you decide you want to buy it, you enter your credit card details or whatever, and Cafe Press then manufacture the product as each sale comes in, and they send it out to you. So I figured, well, you know, it cost me nothing to set it up, so I will set that up, and if anyone feels the desire to spread the word about audio2.com, well, that would be fantastic.
So. Yep, and so we should. We're working hard here for your photography and all your other benefits. So, you know, wear the T-shirts, you know, just get it out there.
Saw the movie, read the book.
That's it. Wore the T-shirt.
Excellent.
By all means, that's a great idea. And we do appreciate any support you give us here. We really do. Whether as simple as an email, or for those who have been, you know, as generous as you have in helping with the postage of the Gorilla Pods, they will come.
Absolutely.
So don't worry about that.
All right, Shelton, thank you very much. Very
no worries,
informative
Bruce.
Once again.
Thank you. And thank you again to all our listeners. We'll look forward to getting back to your same bat time and channel next week.
That's right. And remember, if you want to send Shelton an email, it's shelton@audio2u.com. And until next week, take care.
Good on you. Thanks.
See you, mate.
Bye.
You've been listening to another Fresh Picked Pod from audio2u.com. Audio2u delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable.
You be the boss.
Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear it.
Hey, now that's a good idea.
Audio2u.com. Hit us today.
And remember,
control V to bookmark.
Audio2u.com.